Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. Today is Monday, October 27th, 2008. This is the 33rd podcast. I record it. The PE 10 value today is 15. That's fair value. That means that stocks purchased today offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is The Stock Market is Pricing in a Recession, Isn't It? I came up with the title for this podcast reading an article this morning on the internet, and I believe that the actual line in the article that I read was the stock market is forward-looking. And the fellow writing the article was saying stock market is forward-looking, and that's why prices have dropped so low, and recession is expected. So the stock market is just pricing in the effect of a recession. And I don't, to a large extent, I don't agree with that. I agree with it to some extent, but often the worst thing is to be half right and half wrong. Being half right isn't good enough. If you get something half right, the part that you get wrong can cause a lot of trouble. So it's important to get things as right as we can possibly get them. It certainly is true that if large numbers of stock investors come to believe there's going to be a recession, that's going to cause lower stock prices. That certainly makes sense. So when we read a statement like that, the stock market is forward-looking, or the stock market is pricing in a recession, there's an inclination to just take the statement at face value. It makes sense. It's plausible. We've heard other people say it. We just sort of shake our heads and go on. I have learned not to do that in the field of investing. I can't go through my story here because it would just take too much time away from the topic of the podcast. But my basic story is I'm just a normal investor, at least at one time I was. I believed in passive investing. I believed in the conventional investing advice. I happened to study the old school safe withdrawal rate studies and discovered an analytical error in the methodology of those studies. I reported that on a discussion board and all hell broke loose. And for 6 years now, we've been having discussions in the retire early and indexing board communities about how stock investing really works as a result of what we learned in those discussions. And all of the material at my website and in these podcasts is rooted in what we've learned in those community discussions. And what we learned, strangely enough, amazingly enough, is that while there's obviously a good bit of wisdom in the conventional investing advice, there are critical fallacies. And the fallacies are about the most fundamental points. So 90% of the conventional wisdom is an error. 90% of it is wrong. All the retirement study, all the studies we use to plan our retirements, get the numbers wrong. And the information we hear about what to do with our stock allocations is off the mark, and on and on and on. And so I have worked along with hundreds of other community members over the course of the 6 years. Not at any one time, we haven't had hundreds, but at different communities at different times, we've had hundreds of people making constructive contributions to the discussions. And I've worked to develop a new the model for understanding how investing works. I decided, or I reached the conclusion some years back, that the passive investing model, the conventional model of today, the dominant model of today, is too terribly flawed to do the job we need to understand how investing works. And I've gone to efforts to develop a new model that I call rational investing. And rational investing is the opposite of passive investing. Passive investing says you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. Rational investing says just the opposite. You must change your stock allocation when prices go to dangerously insane levels. And there are all sorts of implications that follow from that. And those are the things we explore at these podcasts and in the articles at the PassionSaving.com website, and also at John Walter Russell's site. John does the statistical research we use in developing the calculators that appear at both of our websites. John's site, if you want to check it out, and you should, is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. So one of the things I've learned is not to take anything that I hear about stock investing at face value. Always question, especially the basics. Always question the basics and try to think things through freshly. If you want to be learning, if you want to develop an understanding of how stock investing works in the real world. So I don't take this statement that the stock market is forward-looking or that the stock market is pricing in a recession. I don't take that statement at face value. The reality, I believe, is that there are two very different forces at work affecting stock prices. One is the economic realities. And the economic realities cause stock prices to be rational. But it doesn't happen for a long time. It takes roughly 30 years for stock prices to become rational. So if you were to purchase stocks at any given time, you can be confident that in 30 years, you will earn a return on your stock investment that will be roughly equal to what you should have earned as the result of purchasing a share of the productivity of the U.S. economy. And the number that is always applied in the past is 6.5% real. So if you buy stocks at any time, no matter what the valuation level, at the end of 30 years, you should have roughly a return of 6.5% real. Not precisely, but something in that neighborhood. And of course, we don't know. The U.S. economy could become more productive in the future, and that number could go up. The U.S. economy could become less productive in the future, and that number will go down. But you can count on rationality. If this theory is true, if the rational investing theory is true, you can count on rational pricing in 30 years. It takes 60 years to get really close to that 6.5% number. But 30 years, you get close enough. Even at the height of the bubble, we had this price bubble in January of 2000, and even that's the most overvalued stocks have ever been. And even then, the most likely price in 30 years was 5.4% real, which is not 6.5 real, but it's close. For practical purposes, that's a rational return on your money for purchasing stocks. So there's a force, a very powerful force, making stock prices rational. And that's good news. That's good news for the stock investor. It means you're not gambling when you buy stocks. You're investing. You can form rational assessments of what sort of return you will obtain. Now, all of that is consistent with the passive investing model. This is why you have so many experts today telling you stocks are best for the long run, because 6.5% real is a fantastic return. And so what the experts have been telling you for 20, 30 years is you should buy stocks. It's your best investment choice. And you should hold them for the long term, because you have to hold them for the long term to be sure of getting that return. However, and there's an important part of the story that the experts, most experts, are not aware of. Probably 10% are aware of this today, and 90% are not. And not that it's hard to understand. It's very simple to understand, but emotionally, it is somewhat difficult for many to accept at this point because they've advocated passive investing for so long. And when you learn the full realities, you realize that passive investing is actually a very dangerous strategy. And many experts have advocated this dangerous strategy. And because they are humans, like all the rest of us, it is difficult and painful for them to admit their mistakes. So the thing that the experts got wrong is they jumped to the conclusion when the academic research began coming in that stock prices are not random. Stock prices don't just drop out of the sky. Stock prices are determined by economic realities. When the academic research started coming in that that is so, a lot of experts jump to the conclusion not only that the market is efficient, which is what I just said when I said that at the end of 30 years, you can count on obtaining a rational price. That's an efficient market. But they jump to the conclusion that the market is not only efficient at the end of 30 years, they jump to the conclusion that the market is instantly efficient, that the market is always efficient. So they jump to the conclusion that if something happens today in the world, that by tomorrow morning that will be reflected in the market price. The market is always efficient. And that's where you get all of the advice that you've heard, the advice that says you can't time the market. If the market is efficient, that means the market price is always close to being right. It's always roughly right. And therefore, no individual, no matter how smart he or she is, can hope to outsmart the market. You can't beat the market. How many times have you heard that in the past 20 or 30 years? I maintain, based on the work we've done in the retire early and indexing discussion board communities for the past 6 years, during the great safe withdrawal rate debate, that that conclusion is false, that the market is not efficient instantly, that the market is not even close to being efficient instantly, that it takes 30 years for this efficiency to kick in totally. And that what happens is that in the short term, stock prices are highly inefficient, that in the short term, it's emotions that control stock prices. And that efficiency starts to enter the picture a tiny bit in 5 years. But at the end of 10 years, the market is efficient to a point at which it's statistically significant. And at 15 years, it's more efficient. And at 20 years, it's highly efficient. And at 30 years, it's not quite perfectly efficient, but close to it for practical purposes. So we have two, not one, force determining stock prices, not just efficiency, not just economic realities. We have a second major force, every bit as powerful as the first, which is human emotion. And that force is actually more powerful today. I would argue that today it's 70% of the game. Why is it so much more powerful? Because all of the expert advice that we hear ignores it. All of the expert advice we've been hearing for two or three decades assumes total efficiency and therefore ignores the effect of emotions. And because this force is ignored, it actually is more powerful because no one's paying attention to it. No one's doing anything about it. So we have two forces determining stock prices. And they, in the short term, if you ask me 1 year, where will stock prices be? I can give you a plain answer. I can say I have no idea whatsoever because the market is totally inefficient. I have no way of predicting the price. I'm just lost. And if you ask me at 30 years, I can give you a good solid answer. I can say the price will be somewhere in the neighborhood of 6.5% real. But if you ask me what will the price be in 5 years, or 10 years, or 15 years, which is what most middle-class investors most care about, since 30 is so distant, And most of us have given up on short-term timing. Most of us care about where prices are going to be in 5 years or 10 years. For that time period, I have to look at another factor. I can't give you an answer. I can't say, I have no clue, because that's not true. Because efficiency will have played a role within 10 years. So I do have a clue. It would be false to say I don't have a clue. But I can't give you any precision, because 10 years is not enough time for efficiency to kick in enough for me to give a precise answer. So what can I do if you want to know what the stock price will be 10 years, the price of the overall market? To answer that question, I would need to know the valuation level that applied on the day you purchased the stocks. Knowing the valuation level, I know where things started. Knowing that the distant long-term return has always been 6.5% real in the United States, I have an idea where I know at least in which direction prices are going to be pulled. And knowing those two things, I can give you a range of possible returns, and I can assign probabilities to different points on the range. And I can pick the point in the middle of the possibilities and identify the most likely return that we will see in 10 years. That's the stock return predictor. If you want to see how that works in action, go to the website, passionsaving.com, and spend a little time playing with the stock return predictor calculator at my website. Now, what this means is, and I think the biggest hurdle that people have in understanding the rational investing model, I put forward the rational model as an alternative to the passive investing model, which I view as an emotional model. Passive investing is emotional investing. It's believing that valuations don't matter. Passive investors often say that valuations matter, but when you look at their actions speak louder than words. When you look at their actions, you see that passive investors do not change their stock allocation with changes in price levels. And so, for practical purposes, passive investors act as if valuations did not matter. That's the thing they're passive about. What are you passive about when you're a passive investor? You're passive about your stock allocation. So you act as if valuations do not matter, even if in some sort of sense you understand that they do. You pretend that they do not. That's emotional. There is no rational reason for pretending that. Valuations have always mattered. Valuations always must matter. So I put forward the rational investing model that says valuations do matter, and that says that investors should be exploring the probabilities of various returns and setting their stock allocation accordingly, so that when prices are at reasonable levels, as they are today, investors should be going with a fairly substantial stock allocation. When prices are absurdly overpriced, investors should be going with a low stock allocation. And when stocks are absurdly underpriced, we should be going with very high stock allocations if we can afford to do so, because the long-term return when we're at very low prices is just extraordinary. But everyone should be changing their stock allocation in response to dramatic price changes. So says Rob Bennett. I believe that the biggest hurdle that many people have in accepting the rational model, in letting it in, is this idea that there are two forces affecting stock prices, not one. There are people in the world who act as if emotions were all that affect stock prices. Market timers. Short-term market timers. Technical analysis is based on that idea. Technical analysis People who follow technical analysis, they look at charts and they try to detect patterns. And when they've determined a pattern, they say, well, this tells me where prices are going in the future. They're not looking at fundamentals. They're not trying to look at the economic realities. It doesn't matter. It's these charts that reveal the human emotions at work that determine stock prices. And if you're able to understand these patterns, you are able to understand where stock prices are going. I don't buy into that idea, but I see the logic of it. And then on the other extreme are the passive investors who say that the market is efficient from the first day. It's always efficient. So emotion just doesn't come into play. Emotion is not a factor in stock prices. And that's the dominant model of today. But rational investing is a combination of these ideas. Rational investing says that the efficient market theory is true. You'll often hear me speak against the efficient market theory. But the full reality is that I accept the efficient market theory, but only in the very distant long term. Only after 30 years does the market become efficient. Whereas I reject the efficient market theory totally in the short term. I say that stock prices are determined by emotion in the short term. So I think it's hard for people to get a handle on the fact that this model, the rational investing model, it's not complicated, but it's slightly more complicated than a model that says there's only one factor. If I said, all that matters is efficient market theory, you could say, well, once I understand efficient market theory, I understand stock investing. But you can't say that with the rational model. You have to say, well, the efficient market theory is a real thing. There is a drive towards efficiency in the market. But there's a countervailing force that is more powerful in the short term. And thus, stock prices do not reflect reality in the short term. And thus, it is possible for an informed investor to outsmart the market. It is possible for you to know more than the market. All that you really need to do to know more than the market is to look at the PE10 value that applies on any given day. If you see that stocks are overvalued, you're able to assess the long-term value proposition. And if you see that stocks are undervalued, you're able to assess the long-term value proposition. And the market as a whole does not know that it is overvalued. You see? That's what makes this all work. The market, I want to say that again, the market as a whole does not know that it is overvalued when it is overvalued. Why doesn't the market know it's overvalued? Why doesn't the market just look at the PE10 value and say, oh, I'm overvalued? Because the market is comprised of people, humans. Humans are not rational actors, not 100%. Humans are emotional. Humans allow emotion to influence their decisions in some sense. We know that the market is overvalued when it is overvalued. Obviously, we are capable of looking at the PE10 value. So there's a level of consciousness in which we are aware that the market is overvalued. But we have the tools needed to block that information out of our intellect. We have something called denial. Humans practice denial. And when we practice denial, we pretend that the market is not overvalued, even when stock prices are outrageously high, when the danger level is in the red alert danger zone. We tune that out, and we just act as if prices were reasonable. We go with our high stock allocations despite the dangers. We're able to block out knowledge. We humans have the capacity to do that, for good or for ill. We have that power, and we do that. So the market as a whole does not know that it is overvalued when it is overvalued. All right. Now, what happens in a situation like today? This, the article I was reading, the fellow was saying, the stock market is forward-looking. The stock market is pricing in a recession. Is that true? It's certainly true to an extent. There are people out there who are aware that we are probably either in a recession or going into a recession. And those people are, they're checking their little charts and they're saying, this means that businesses will be failing, and this means the consumers will be reducing their spending, and this will reduce earnings by X amount, and this will cause the stock price to go down by X amount. So yes, that is a factor. But the way that most people make these statements when they say the stock market is forward-looking or the stock market is pricing in a recession, implicit in that sort of statement is the idea that we are pricing in a recession properly. And there I take great issue. First of all, I question whether it's even possible to price in a recession accurately. There are recessions, and then there are recessions. No one knows today what sort of recession we're going to have. How could anyone know that? People can take guesses. You can go onto the internet and put these things into a Google search, and you'll find all sorts of guesses. You can find dozens. But they're all just guesses. Is it going to be a short recession? Is it going to be a long recession? Is it going to be a mild recession? Is it going to be a painful recession? Is it going to get so bad that it becomes a depression, not just a recession? Who knows? No one can. It's not even possible. You could have the most powerful computer in the world and you don't know the answer to that question. Why? Because in order to know the answer to that question, you need to know how human beings are going to respond to this recession. And we don't know. If humans sort of take it in stride, the recession, it will still hurt. It will still hurt. But if we take it in stride, we will come out of that recession. What if we don't take it in stride? What if we freak out? That may prolong the recession. And there's no way of knowing. There are people will try to figure it out. What they'll do is they'll look at what happened historically and they'll say, some people will say, oh, every 14 years there's a major recession. They'll come up with some sort of rule of thumb. And they'll say, it's been 14 years now, so we're due. But that sort of analysis, you can't depend on it because it doesn't happen every 14 years like clockwork. Maybe sometimes it takes 10 years and sometimes it takes 18 years. So you can't just say every 14 years. It could be we're going to head into a prolonged recession 4 years from now when we hit the 18-year mark, not today. And the economy changes all the time. The people comprising the economy change all the time. The needs, the economic needs change. Are people more pressed financially because they're more worried about retirement than they used to be, or less worried than they used to be, or they're more worried about financing their kids' college education than they used to be, or they're more worried about health care, or they're less worried? To factor in all of these things it can't be done. It can't be done because there are thousands of potential factors. And not only are there thousands of potential factors, there are thousands of ways they can mix together. So yes, the recession is indeed being priced in to the market price. That certainly is true. But there's an implication in that declarative sentence, the stock market is pricing in a recession, that the market is pricing in a recession accurately. And that I dispute. We don't know what kind of recession it's going to be. And even if we did, we wouldn't necessarily price it in accurately. Say that we had perfect knowledge of what recession we're going to have. There was some computer model, and it told us productivity is going to slow down this amount, or, you know, X number of businesses are going to fail, earnings are going to drop by this amount. Would we then be able to say what the proper market price is? We would not. Just because we know what the effect is going to be, that doesn't mean that human investors are going to go by that in determining whether to sell their stocks or not. I've talked in earlier podcasts about stock panic. Well, we could have the beginnings of a short, mild recession, and that could cause panic, which would mean there'd be a big drop in earnings. Not a small drop, even though the recession was relatively mild. The problem is that if you look at the numbers side of the stock investing project, you're looking at roughly 30% of what determines results in the stock market. You're ignoring 70%, which is determined by investor emotions. And you cannot get the right answer by looking only at 30%. You just cannot. You can study those numbers from now until doomsday, and you're never going to have a good grasp of how stock investing works. You need to include human emotions. And human emotions are evidenced in valuations. So to understand how stock investing works in the real world, you have to always adjust in any investing analysis. You must adjust for valuations. And surprise, surprise, that's just what those following the efficient market theory do not do. That's just what those who believe in passive investing do not do. They generate numbers-based studies like they're going out of style, but all of the numbers are wrong because the numbers do not include valuation adjustments. So all of these studies look at 30% of the question and ignore 70%. And that's what's happening when someone says, well, you know, the reason people are talking about does the stock market price in a recession? The reason they're talking about it is, one, people want to understand why prices have fallen so hard over the past 12 months. That causes shock. You know, we've lost $8 trillion. That causes shock. And so humans turn to, when people feel shock, they try to explain what caused the shock. Nothing is more common in human experience. What's the first thing you do when you hear that somebody got in a car accident? What's the first thing? Maybe the first thing you do is say, did they get hurt? I believe that could be the first thing for many people, and that's a perfectly appropriate reaction. If you hear a friend of yours or a colleague was in a car accident, the first thing you would say is, did they get hurt? So what's the second thing? The second thing is, how did it happen? We all want to know, how did it happen? The reason why that's important is we want to know, you know, if we say that you hear somebody got killed, somebody you know, a coworker, somebody got killed in a car accident. Of course you're upset, but you're upset on different levels. You're upset for the person. You're also upset for yourself. You're a little scared. That could happen to me. One of the thoughts that comes into your head is that could happen to me. So what do you need to know so that you'll feel secure enough to get in your car and drive home tonight? You need to know that they did something that they shouldn't have done. they were drunk. Well, if they were drunk, that changes it. Because you're not drunk. You don't drive drunk. So what happened to them probably won't happen to you. I'm not saying that this is kind or charitable. I'm saying this is how the human mind works. We all have fears. It's not just the mind, it's the emotions. We all have fears of getting in car accidents. And so when we hear that someone got in a car accident, we want to know, is there some cause I can attribute this to so that it won't, I can have confidence it won't happen to me? Maybe they were drunk. Or maybe they were speeding. Or maybe they were just poor drivers. Or, you know, maybe they went to a repair shop and the repair was done improperly, so the car wasn't functioning as it should. Well, that leaves you off the hook a little bit, because you're not going to a repair shop, or you only go to a repair shop, a guy who you know does a good job. So you don't have to worry about that. We all want to be relieved of concern that we're going to get in a car accident. It's an emotional reaction to hearing that somebody we know has been in a car accident. Well, the same thing is true when we hear that stock prices have fallen so much that we've lost $8 trillion of wealth in 12 months. We want to know, why did it happen? So someone comes along and says, the stock market is pricing in a recession. You say, oh, well, that's not good. But at least it's understandable. Stock market is pricing in a recession. So, well, prices have fallen awfully far. So that recession must be just about totally priced in. So now at least prices will start to go up again. Maybe they overpriced it in. Maybe the recession is not going to be as bad. So prices are going to go up pretty fast now. See? You start to feel better. But I say we're fooling ourselves. It's true that the recession is, the thought that there's going to be a recession does affect stock prices. I do not dispute this point. What I dispute is the idea that this can be calculated with any exactitude at all, and that we should be drawing any comfort from the thought that this is the explanation for the stock crash. I want us to recognize the true cause of the stock crash. I maintain that the true cause is our misplaced belief in passive investing. Had we acknowledged many years ago, when the academic research started to show that the efficient market theory does not stand up to scrutiny, that passive investing does not work, had we acknowledged that, we would have lowered our stock allocations at an earlier time, and there would not have been a stock crash, even if there had been a recession. At least not, there wouldn't have been a stock crash of the size we saw. Say that we all became rational investors 10 years ago. Stock prices would have fell. And say a recession came to be at the time it did, you know, today, that we were heading into a recession. We probably would have seen a drop in stock prices, but it wouldn't have been an $8 trillion drop. It would have been a small drop, not this huge drop that we've just experienced. So it's not right to say that the reason stock prices have fallen is because the stock market is pricing in a recession. The primary cause is that stock prices were absurdly overvalued. And I think it is critically important that we acknowledge that, because it is only by acknowledging it that we can learn how stocks work in the real world and go forward with some confidence that we know what we're doing. If we continue to fool ourselves about this sort of thing, we continue to subject ourselves to surprises which cause panics, which cause us to buy stocks at the wrong time and to sell stocks at the wrong time. What are stocks going to do going forward from here? That's what people really want to know. That's what people really want to know. They talk about all these things. You can tell. See, I see everything today from the standpoint of a confirmed rational investor, a confirmed believer in the rational investing model. And so I read between the lines of a lot of these statements. Something that gets me is I follow discussion boards, and passive investing is the dominant model today. So you hear a lot of people citing the passive investing slogans. Stocks for the long run, buy and hold, stay the course, timing doesn't work, all these sorts of things. Go to the bogleheads.org board. And they are, not everyone there believes in passive investing, but the leaders of the board certainly do. And there are heavy penalties exacted on those who question the passive investing dogmas too strongly. So you'll hear a lot of people there do believe in passive investing, to be sure. A lot of people believe it very strongly. But if you believe in the ideas of John Bogle, and obviously they call themselves Bogleheads, so they say right on the board, investing ideas inspired by John Bogle. John Bogle doesn't believe in short-term timing any more than I do. But look at the threads there. More than 50% of the discussions are about what's going to happen to stocks in the short term. That's especially true today, but it's always true. More than 50% of the discussions are about what stocks are going to do in the next year or the next 2 years or the next 5 years. Why? If all of these people have bought into the idea that short-term timing doesn't work, why do they care what's going to happen in the short term? They care because the passive investing model is not really a long-term model. It claims to be. It purports to be a long-term model, but it's not. And the reason it's not is that the passive investing model is rooted in a belief in the efficient market theory. And the efficient market theory is rooted in a belief that prices are set rationally. And if prices are set rationally, stock prices should be predictable. Rational things are predictable. So there's a conflict built right into the passive investing model. On the one hand, the model is saying prices are rational, both in the long term and in the short term. The human mind should be able to figure out where prices are headed, according to the passive investing model. That's not true with the rational investing model. The rational investing model says that in the short term, prices are not efficient. Prices are irrational. Prices are emotional. They're set by emotions, not human reason. So I don't ever make an effort to determine where prices are headed in the short term, because my model tells me it can't be done. And it doesn't just tell me on one level, as the passive investing model does say that on one level. But the problem is, on this other level, it contradicts itself. So people who follow that model don't really believe that the short term is not predictable. They're always trying to figure it out. They can't let it go. And that's what I hear. When I hear this statement, the stock market is pricing in a recession, what I hear is somebody struggling with the question of, boy, I wasn't expecting this price drop. Not like this. I got to figure out what to do. And then the fellow's thinking, oh, I know, I got it. It's pricing in a recession. It all makes sense. This isn't scary. I've got it. And then the next step is, now let me do some calculations. Let me figure out recession. And then he looks at the last time we had a recession. Oh, stock prices fell 23%. So now we've fallen 23. So now it's going to go up. He's reassuring himself. He's turning to human reason to try to make sense of this huge price crash. And he's going to invest on a going forward basis according to what he comes up with. Now, all of that is, in one sense, it's admirable. He's turning to his human reason to make sense of life. That's just what he should be doing. Where I part company with him is, I think he's applying his human reason to a gravely flawed model of how investing works. He thinks that he can figure out when this price crash is going to stop and take advantage of that. And if prices are set emotionally, it can't be done. So I think it's a futile quest. So I truly don't worry about the short term. And I'm attuned to this sort of thing, and so I hear it all the time. I went to church the other week, and somebody I had talked to this woman about investing at an earlier time, and the investing was in the news. Obviously, the price crash was in the news, and she said, what do you say to do? And I'm put on the spot when somebody asks that, because you know what I think. If you listen to the podcast, I start off every podcast. I say prices are now reasonable and stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition. So I could give that answer. But the trouble is, without expanding on that, I sound just like the passive investing people. The passive investing people say buy stocks, now because prices are good. So it's true, but I feel the more important message is passive investing doesn't work, because I was advising a very low stock allocation a year ago when prices were at sky high levels. So what I want to tell the woman is, it depends on your circumstances. Are you a passive investor? If you've been investing passively, my advice is to just sort of get out of stocks for 6 months. Get the emotion out of your system. It's passive investing is a poison, in my view. And you need to just get it out of your system. And the stock market's still going to be there 6 months from now. It might be a little higher, it might be a little lower. You might lose a little bit, you might gain a little bit by being out 6 months. If you're able to use those 6 months to learn about the rational model and how stock investing really works, I think you'll be better off for many years to come. So I think it's worth it. If you could learn while still being invested, that would be fine. But it's hard, because if you've got your money in stocks, you're going to be worried. Each time prices drop, you're going to get a little more panicky. Each time prices go up, you're going to start to slip back into that passive investing mindset. You're going to start thinking, oh, it's not so bad. Passive investing's okay. I started reading up on this rational investing stuff, but I can drop that now. We're headed back up again. If you can't overcome your emotions enough to start reexamining your premises, you're better off just detaching yourself for 6 months or a year and spend that time learning about a model that you can have, that you can really believe in, you can really have confidence in. Another example of this was, there's a fellow, Azanon. He posted at the Goon Central Board, and he's a smart guy, and he actually agrees with much of what I say about investing. He put up a thread, and he said, Rob, I see value in what you're doing. But then he had this one point he was making, and he was saying PE10 can be used to predict short-term changes in the market. as well. He said, I would love to have a metric that would help me time the market. He says, I would just love that. And I said, Azanon, I believe I can give you one. I believe we found one. It really works. We've got historical data showing it works. We've got common sense says it works. But he was saying, well, why don't you put up a graphic that shows when the P10 value is X, stocks are going to do such and such over the next few years. And I said, well, that's not the way it works, Azanon. I can't tell you just because, you know, take a P10 level of 25 is horrible. It's the red alert danger zone, a horrible valuation level. I can't tell you stocks are going to go down from a P10 level of 25. They could go up, they could go down, they could stay the same. I have no way of knowing. I can tell you 10 years out, they're probably going to go down hard. But I can't tell you in a year or 2 years or 3 years what they're going to do. And he wanted me to do that. He said, no, you should be able to do that. He's got this idea in his head that timing is timing is timing. And he ain't the only one. Taylor Larimore, co-author of The Boglehead's Guide to Investing, I can't tell you how many threads we had where he would give this list of 30 big name experts who say timing the market doesn't work. And I'd say, Taylor, they're all talking about short-term timing. I agree, short-term timing does not work. How about long-term timing? The same data that tells us that short-term timing doesn't work tells us that long-term timing does work. And he would always respond the same way. He would either ignore me, or he would put up a new post citing not 30 experts, but 45 experts. You know, he would increase the number of experts, as if somehow that helped. You know, and of course, emotionally, it probably does. A lot of people look at it and they say, 45 experts, Taylor must know, 45 experts. He could cite 450 experts, it wouldn't make any difference. He's got to find one expert that shows that long-term timing doesn't work. He doesn't have one. Forget 45. Long-term timing and short-term timing are two different things. But people have a hard time accepting that. And I think the reason is that they think that, I guess with a car, you know, when you press the accelerator, it goes faster. So they're just thinking, what makes stocks go faster? And they're saying, well, a low P10 value, Rob seems to be saying a low P10 value is good. So I guess low P10 is pressing the accelerator and high P10 is bad. So high P10, you press the brake. And I'm saying, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the stock car behaves in totally different ways in the short term from how it behaves in the long term. It's true that as an investor, you push the accelerator when the P10 value is low, and you push the brake when the P10 value is high. But you do that knowing that you have no idea how that strategy is going to pay off in the short term. None. You could see a high P10 value, drop your allocation down to 20%, and stock prices could zoom. And that happened to me. I sold all of my stocks in 1996. And stock prices went to the moon in 1997, 1998, 1999. But it doesn't matter because I'm a long-term investor. So in a couple of years, I was ahead of the game as stocks did poorly. And the alternate investment classes that I put my money in did much better. And now after the stock crash, I'm way ahead. And now I can put my money in stocks. And I have more money to put in stocks than I would if I had invested passively and lost a big chunk of it. But if you don't understand the difference between what happens in the short term and what happens in the long term, rational investing just cannot work for you. It cannot work for you. That's a big caveat people have to understand. And it's not hard to understand. It's not complex. It's simple, but it's different. It's different from what you've always heard. You've always heard about passive investing, and passive investing just says the market is always efficient. It's efficient in one day, it's efficient in a year, it's efficient in 10 years, it's efficient in 30 years, it's efficient in 60 years. That's not the rational model. The difference is that valuations are emotions, and the efficient market theory, passive investors are also opposed to emotional investing, at least nominally. But their way of ignoring, their way of dealing with emotions is to ignore them. They just say, if we ignore emotions, never talk about them, never look at valuations, never worry our heads about it, emotions won't hurt us. We'll somehow fly above emotions. And I say just the opposite. What I say is, you want to beat your negative emotions? Get down there and grapple with them. Invite challenges to your investing ideas. Don't just admit that valuations affect long-term returns and then act as if they didn't. Act as if they did. Study valuations. Spend time looking at the historical data. Notice how valuations have always affected returns in the past. Get down there into the nitty-gritty. The more you know about emotions and the more you know about valuations, the better results you will get. It won't make you emotional to study emotions. It will make you less emotional. It will give you the information you need to counter the influence of the emotions. So, it's not just a recession that's causing today's stock prices. And of course, the truth of the matter is, the causation could be totally reversed. It could well be, and I think there's a lot of evidence that this is so, that it's the stock crash that's causing the recession, not the recession that's causing the stock crash. They've got it backwards. That both affect each other. The full reality is that the stock crash causes the recession, and then the recession causes the stock crash. It really works both ways. But this is fantasy thinking that the stock market is pricing in a recession. It has truth in it. It's a half-truth. Like so many of the passive investing concepts, it's just true enough to fool a lot of smart people. But it's not true enough to permit those who believe in it to become effective, successful, long-term investors. You need to understand the truth of it. You need to understand that, yes, recessions will cause lower stock prices. That's good to know. That's important to know. But you need to understand the holes in the idea. You need to understand both. Or you're going to be led to believe that, oh, this price crash is explainable, and, oh, we've already priced in the full effect of a recession, so we're not going to go lower now. Well, guess what? There's a real good chance we're going to go a lot lower. There's no guarantee. I can't tell you the future. I don't know. But certainly, it's a live possibility that we're going to drop another 50%. And you better be prepared for that. If you're going to invest in stocks today, and you should be invested in stocks today, stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition today. If you're going to be invested in stocks, you better be prepared for a 50% price crash starting today from today's levels. If you're not, you shouldn't be in stocks. If you're not prepared for a 50% price drop starting from today's prices, you should not be invested in stocks. So says Rob Bennett. Because that's a live possibility. And if you want to collect on those 10-year returns, quote-unquote promised, in the stock return predictor, the stock return predictor is rooted in an assumption that you can hold for 10 years. And if you don't understand what makes prices go up and down, and it's emotion in the short term, it's emotion over the next 10 years. If you don't understand that, you just cannot play this game. It's a dangerous game for anyone who doesn't understand that the primary driver in the short term is emotions. And no passive investor understands that. Passive investing is rooted in the idea of the efficient market theory, which says that prices are rational from day one. So, put the pieces there together, and you have a statement by Rob Bennett that no passive investor should be invested in stocks. And that is what I believe. It sounds radical, because most of us are passive investors. But I do believe that. I think stock investing is a serious business. It's a risky enterprise. And you have to understand the ABCs. And passive investing is rooted in a denial of the ABCs. So I think we need to get past it. We need to get to the other side. We could start going up from today's prices. We could stay stable. We could go down. And the reason why I can't tell you which it's going to be is that it is emotion that determines things. And there are so many emotional cross currents possible, there's no way to predict them. It could be that collectively we are going to make a decision that the price crash has been too much too quickly, too much too soon, and we're going to go halfway back to where we were. People are going to react to this and say, no. We're now at about Dow 8,400. People may say, that's crazy. You know, we're going to go back to Dow 10,000 or Dow 11,000. Or it could be that people are going to say, if we've fallen to Dow 8,400, we could fall to Dow 4,400. I'm getting out. I can't take it anymore. Then we would fall. Or it could be that people will say, I'm shocked and I can't even respond. I'm just going to wait 3 months. I'm not even going to look at my statements. I'm just going to go into denial. I don't want to know. I'm not going to read about it. And then in 3 months, they'll work up the courage. And at that point, if we haven't gone back to Dow 11,000, they'll sell then. So there'll be a series of price shocks spread out every 3 months for the next 5 years. Or could be, we'll shoot up to Dow 11,000. And then the people that were in a panic today will say, hey, I never thought I'd get a chance to get out at Dow 11,000 again. Now I'm getting out. So we'll shoot up, and we'll already have pre-programmed in the emotions that'll send us shooting back down again. These are all possibilities. How can you put this into a computer and figure it out without interviewing every investor, and not only interviewing them, psychoanalyzing them? And people don't tell you the truth. It's not like you can ask them, are you going to sell at 6,000 or are you going to sell at 11,000? They're not going to tell you the truth. They don't know the truth. No one knows the truth about themselves, about their own emotions. People don't know. Do you know when you date someone? Do you know, if you're in a bad relationship, can you really say, I will tolerate so much and then I'll quit? Then I'll get out. A lot of us have been in relationships where we tolerated a lot of things that going in we would have said we would have never tolerated. But our emotions got a hold of us. And a lot of us have said that we'll tolerate anything. We will never end a relationship. And we found out that that wasn't true. There were some things we couldn't tolerate. The same thing is true with stocks. There are people who today have given up on passive investing. There are people who today, once upon a time, they said, I will always, always, always stick with stocks, always stick with my high stock allocation. And today, they say, no, I was wrong. But there are others today who say, no, I really will always stick. But if we fall to Dow 6,000, they will then say, no, I was wrong. Emotions cannot be predicted because they are not rational. Rational things can be predicted. If the market were efficient from the first day, as the passive investing advocates say it is, short-term timing would be possible. You could calculate the market price would be is just an accurate reflection of the economic realities, and you would be able to build a computer that would give you some idea of what effect the recession's going to have, and you'd have a rough idea of how low prices should go, when to buy, when to sell. But that's not possible. There's a reason why short-term timing doesn't work. The reason it doesn't work is that prices are determined by emotions in the short term, and that efficiency kicks in only somewhere around 10 years. There's some efficiency at 5 years, but it doesn't become statistically significant until about 10 years. And that it becomes more and more statistically significant the farther you go out, until you get 30 years out, where the market's pretty darn efficient. So I'd be careful about statements like the stock market is pricing in a recession. Yes, yes, it's a factor. But don't be taken in by the implications that I see hidden in that statement. Don't start thinking that the market is pricing things effectively or efficiently or rationally or properly or accurately. We're dealing with human emotions. Stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition today, but we have no idea, in my opinion, we have no idea where the market price is going to be a year from now or 5 years from now. So be sure, before you put your money in stocks today, be sure that you can live through the worst case scenario and not have it emotionally affect you to cause you to sell. And the worst case scenario today is a price drop of 50%. That would bring us down to a P10 level of 7 or 8, which is where we have gone on the three earlier occasions when we went to La La Land price levels, which is where we were from 1995 through the first part of 2008. Stock prices are determined by emotions in the short term, by economic realities only in the long term. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care. We'll be right back.